Okay, so the first thing we do is make sure, because this is indeed radio, that we have the right person in the room. So would you be so kind as to identify yourself, please?
Yes, my name is Casey Spooner.
And I did actually see a little bit of your performance, so I have to vouch for that for our listeners.
Well, sort of. You saw a sound check.
So it could have really been you lip-syncing. You could have been lip-synca.
Could have.
Let's start with today and work backwards, since the bio on your site ends in 2005, and we've had a little time since that. So should we just skip right to Hamlet?
So we did a residency in Ibiza last summer. Well, I never, ever, 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 ever wanted to go to Ibiza. We were asked several times many, many years ago when we were working with Ministry of Sound, and I said, absolutely not, hands down, never did I want to go anywhere where there are all those people running around in daylight wearing like fuzzy booties and, you know, sucking on lollipops with, you know, antenna stars on their head.
Makes the East Village seem tame.
I don't know. It's so different. It's like, I don't even know how to describe. So anyway, so we did this residency in Ibiza. All I was going to say, this is in regards to Hamlet, is that I lived in Ibiza for 3 months, and I felt like I needed the antidote to Ibiza. So when I was coming back from Ibiza, I was like, what is the antidote for living in this weird, drug-riddled, Fellini-esque, you know, erotic, after-hours, land of misfit toys summer that I just went through?
Nice sentence.
Yeah. And what I decided is that I'd been talking to the Wooster Group, and I was telling them that I wanted to perform in something. And so when I was literally driving to Heathrow, I called and I said, I'm coming home and I'm ready. And so I went and I met with Liz LeCompte and Kate Valk and you know, talked to them. And so I went in, and after we did our sort of like our final show for a while, which was last Halloween, I went in on November 2nd and auditioned for Hamlet, and I never left.
I love the article from the New York Times talking about the anti-war show at the Hammerstein, or Hammerstein, depending on whether you're doing Sound of Music or New York City, ballroom. Do you know the quote?
Well, there was a bitchy quote and there was a pop.
Let me refresh your memory, because I love
about bad vocals, I remember.
No, I like this.
Okay.
And you know, I'll do my, you should be called, by the way, Mr. Casey, because it's the New York Times, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? But the best parts of New York of Monday night's concert were also the hammiest. The members of the performance-oriented neo-disco, I love neo-disco, act Fisher Spooner did their best to challenge tired old ideas about what protest music is supposed to sound and look like. As the costume dancers pranced, the glittery frontman, you are glittery, by the way, Casey Spooner declared, "This war is ridiculous. While he may not be an expert on war, he certainly is an expert on ridiculous. There's no reason why folk rock has to be the dominant form of anti-war music."
Yeah.
But you see, that's a gilded compliment.
That made me, are you kidding? That was exactly what I was hoping for.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, because it was like, why do we have to listen to a bunch of sappy, sad sack.
Joan Baez Jr., right?
Yeah, and I wanted also, it was exciting to do that performance because it was about taking kind of a Busby Berkeley-esque, super patriotic. We had 10 dancers. It was red, white, and blue. It was all about kind of, because I've been really frustrated with the life of the American flag and how it's kind of been hijacked in recent years, and how after September 11th, there was just, you know, this resurgence of the flag everywhere that you saw. And then it felt like it was kind of hijacked by the Republican Party. And it felt like if you were a liberal or if you were anti-war, that you weren't allowed to be patriotic and you weren't allowed to use the flag. So the goal for me was to be anti-war and to be liberal and to be patriotic at the same time, and not letting, you know, Republicans run off with democracy.
Music and politics mixes in strange ways these days, doesn't it?
It's complicated, but yes. I like the way it looks.
Yes, and it should look good, because if you're going to do it, you might as well. I asked this question, and I was really young at that time, in 1978. I asked this question of David Byrne, and I have asked it ever since. Why do you think that art school students make the best musicians?
God, I don't know. I mean, I think for me is that especially now, art isn't really, it's so broad, the techniques and the approaches, that it's not a very strict discipline. So in a way, you have to kind of, you have to create your own discipline. You have to, in a way, find your own curriculum and your own path. And so I think that that was the great thing that I learned in art school, was how to have an idea, how to conceptualize it, and how to see it through to its end. And so I think that that's one of the things that's really great about art school, and one of the awful things, because you can waste a lot of time and pay a lot of money and get nothing done, and there's not really anything anyone can do to help you, because, you know, in the realm of postmodernism and the death of the academic approach to the arts, you have to kind of find your own way. And if you can find your own way and create your own discipline, then you can do anything.
Okay, so since we're here in this Fashion Week thing, what are people in for tonight?
Well, first of all, I love San Francisco.
Yeah?
We have a great audience here. And so I'm a little kind of freaked out, because this is the first time we haven't played here. We haven't played the Fillmore when we play here. So that always feels like our home base.
Incredible venue, yeah.
It's a really great venue, and the audiences have always been, you know, ecstatic and transcendental for us here. So that's one reason why I know I always want to come to San Francisco.
That's why I left New York.
Is, you know, and also I think it's because it is kind of a, there's a real high freak quotient here. And I think we appeal to not just the fashion, but the freakery too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Are people who hear you on record and have not seen you surprised when they see what the band's all about? I said the band, but you know, they think it's the band, so.
It's gone back and forth. We've had a lot of different seasons and weather, and it's changed. It's like meteorology around the world. So, you know, one year we're hot in Germany, and then it travels to England, and then you're big in California, and they despise you in Germany and Switzerland and Belgium, and then everyone's into you, you know, in New York, and then New York is over, and then you're hot in Spain. So right now we seem to be really on in Spain. We keep going back to Spain. You know, we got a lot of a press about our live show that we did in New York for years, and so those shows in New York were really special, because we would work with, you know, as many people as we possibly could, and everyone was volunteering, and there were these kind of barn raisings that were happening that were a combination of all these different creative and ambitious people in New York. And then when we tried to put that on the road, was such a difficult task. And so I think that it translated to some degree, but it didn't ultimately represent what most people found so exciting in New York, because it was impossible to take 80 people. And there were, I mean, no one could do, you just can't put it on the road. It was more like this strange happening. And so the show has changed a lot. I mean, we went from the first album being completely synthetic and really embracing that and making the most artificial kind of punk rock synthetic pop show, and now the last record we wanted to use instruments, we wanted to make something that was warmer, so now I actually do sing live, and you know, there are instruments that are played, and it's been difficult to try to find that balance and to evolve and how to hang on to the synthetic aspect of it that's plastic and beautiful, and also make it vital and alive.
Yeah, and the thing we have to do on your next record, because I popped it into iTunes, you know, people try to categorize you, right? So is it performance art, and is it music? But what bothered me is the genre that came up on iTunes was electronica.
We always said that we were making rock music, but it was just with computers, so.
Yeah. Now, I did read, and I'm not going to go too deep into the controversial waters, but, you know, we have to give a little bit of spice here, that Odyssey, you didn't really feel that Capitol did their very best that they could have to push the living, you know, shite out of that record.
No, I don't think so. I mean,
shite is allowed, by the way, on the radio.
I mean, they were very, very supportive, and it's not entirely their fault. We went over budget and way over schedule.
And oh, my God. Well, that's they're so unused to that.
No, pretty bad. Real bad. Let me just tell you, real bad. Like, double and double.
So congratulations.
We were a year late, and we doubled the budget. And they were supportive, and we got the damn thing finished, which I honestly didn't think was going to happen. But because we ran so late and because we overspent so much on making it, that there wasn't any money left at the end
to push people like me into playing it.
Yeah, and so
no payola money. Darn it.
Well, also not only that, I couldn't get tour support to go on the road, and I couldn't. It's like you can't afford retail space, and you can't afford. You know, it's like all of a sudden everything is kind of.
I wish they told you that earlier.
Well, you know, it's my own fault. I wanted to dance with the devil. I wanted to, you know, see what it's like to be on the other side and to not be in the underground and to not be always bitching and complaining about being left out and to be a participant. So I'm, you know, there's definitely a learning curve in participating in business and creative interests. So I'm just glad that the record's good and that it will have a life. And even if it doesn't explode, you know, it's nice that it kind of keeps going and has, you know, it feels like it has strength.
Give me the 1 minute version, since it is current now, of the Susan Sontag story.
Oh, God. I met Susan through this really cool curator named Klaus Biesenbach, who founded this museum in Berlin called Kunstwerk, and he sponsored our first show in Europe that we did with Gigolo in Berlin in 2000, which was amazing and a real breakthrough moment for us. And Klaus was friends with Susan, and I'm trying to remember the first time I met her. I think he invited me to, she had a little birthday party, and we went and hung out, and Susan was really approachable and really charismatic, super cool. I mean, I was very intimidated. I thought she was going to be, you know, intensely serious and no fun, and she was the opposite. And I just said, you know, I would love to write a song with you one day. And she said, I would love to. I've always wanted to write a song. And so several months passed, and, you know, she was traveling all over the world constantly. You know, you call her and it'd be like, I'm in the Czech Republic, I'm on my way to Africa, I'm, you know, she was always in Paris or something. And there was this one day when we first started working on the record. It was very early in the writing process, which was not going well. And I called Susan, and between her schedule and my schedule, we realized that basically if I didn't come over to her house at that minute, it was never going to happen. So I went over to her house, and I showed up. She had this amazing penthouse on the top of London Terrace that was literally chock-a-block full of books everywhere and Piranesi prints all over the place. And she was hanging out with her Italian translator, who was very serious and no fun. And so we came in, and one of the reasons why I was so excited about working with her is because I had this huge encyclopedic book, this notebook full of every possible song idea that I could dig up from every journal, from every scrap of paper, from every love letter, from everything I could possibly ever mine for content. And I had very meticulously filed it into this huge book, but I did not have one song. And so I was like, you know what? This is going to be amazing. I'm going to sit down. Susan's going to go through. She's going to see my list of song ideas. She's going to see all my raw material. And I'm going to get to learn how to be a writer by watching her take material and see what she does with it. So we went through the book, and, you know, she went through it, and she flipped through, and we talked about different stuff, and nothing piqued her interest. And so, you know, I'd be like, okay, I want to do the song about decay and landscape and about Capri and the idea of brutality. And I've also like this John Giorno title, Burn to Shine. I've been trying to figure out how to use it. I like the book. I'm like, nothing. She was completely not interested. Then she started going through and looking at stuff that I didn't want her to look at. She said, okay, I have an idea. And she left, and I sat in the kitchen with the Italian translator, and we drank coffee. And literally, I was like, so what's going on in Italy? And he was like, oh, we have a lot of refugees. And I was like, okay, and I don't know where to go with that one.
That makes a good song right there. There are a lot of refugees.
So then Susan came back about 15 minutes later, and she handed me the song called We Need a War. And I was like, Susan, I was like, you know, I totally want to respond to the current state of affairs and, you know, I feel like I need to react to post 9/11 and politics and everything, but I just don't know if this is the kind of song that we can do. I mean, we're coming off of like Sounds Good, Looks Good, Feels Good. I don't know if I can go right into, you know, We Need a War. And she was really cool because, you know, she was like, well, what is it exactly that makes it, you know, why couldn't you do the song? And I said, well, I just don't know if I feel comfortable saying the word war. And she said, you know what? Your president just approved $80 billion for a war yesterday. You need to be able to say the word. So it was this total, she threw the gauntlet down and gave me this intellectual challenge. And so, of course, I was like, well, that's cool. Okay, well, maybe we'll do, you know, I've got a couple other ideas. Maybe she was like, nope, that's it. That's the song.
You were with the master, yeah. And the master had spoken.
Yes, and she was like, that's it. That's the song.
And I was like, you do not regret it today by any stretch of anyone's imagination.
No, not at all, because she really helped me open a door and feel that I could say things in this context that I wasn't sure if I could get away with. But it was also about trying to find the right tone in order to say the words, because the words are so simple, yet have this delicate twist to them, and so flat in a way that it was, you know, it took a long time to find the right music and the right voice for it. And actually the breakthrough was, I was listening to a Kylie Minogue song called Body Language, and I loved how breathy her voice was in the vocal production, and then that's when I realized, I was like, oh, right, it can't be this bombastic, you know, whining, shouting voice. It needs to be a seductive, sexualized voice. And so then that was when
it all came together.
That's when it was like the voice and the words, and then we could kind of put the whole thing together.
You and I are going to build a musical sandwich, and here's what we do. We take two Fisher Spooner songs as the bread. Mm-hmm. And then whatever comes to your mind in between that you've always wanted to hear with your music, I bring in the CDs and the records.
I would start with Get Confused. I just like that one. And I feel like no one ever listens to that. I start with Get Confused, and then I would pick one of the Mahler songs from Death in Venice. And then I would play Rita Mizuko, Come See, Come Saw. And then I would play, there's this new band called The Presets that I like, mm-hmm. And I think I would play their, oh God, Are You the One is the name of their song. I play that one. Nights in White Satin by the Moody Blues.
The nice long version,
yeah,
with the
nice,
whole, the extended version, right?
Extended version. 10cc, Art for Art's Sake. I like that song. And then, okay, I'm gonna go on a prog rock jag for a second. I would play this band called Spirit, and they have this song that I love called Nature's Way. Nature Boy might be good after that Nature one. Maybe go to New York Excuse with Soul Wax is a good classic standard comeback. Then why don't we just play Madonna, Get Into the Groove.
Very cool.